Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we get to hear the conclusion of a very informative interview for parents on the changes that occur as a girl becomes a woman and how to talk to your daughter about that change. It's something I'm not going to have to do for about 10 more years, so I bowed out of this program, but it features our physician in residence and co-host for Family Talk, Dr. Meg Meeker, and our friend and medical expert and author, Dr. Walt Larrenmore. So here now is Dr. Meg Meeker and Dr. Walt Larrenmore for the conclusion of Helping Teen Girls Understand Their Bodies on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, we are back with Dr. Walt Larrenmore, and we are concluding a program that we started yesterday on his wonderful book called The Ultimate Girl's Body Book. And I'm thrilled to have a book like this as a pediatrician as a resource in my office because I found that it's one of the most commonly asked for resources in my practice are books on explaining to girls the changes they go through in puberty. And he also has the Ultimate Boy's Body Book so that we can give that to boys and talk them through puberty as well. So, Dr. Larrenmore, welcome back.
Oh, good to be with you, Meg.
We were talking yesterday and finishing our program about depression and girls. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to just drill down in that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Why do you think so many young people are depressed? Now, I know that's you can't paint a broad swath and say all kids are depressed, but what do you think are the two or three things going on in our culture that are the reasons that we're seeing so much more depression in kids?
Yeah, and you're right. There are many, many causes. And in fact, in the book, we talk about dozens of possible causes. But one that I see frequently in our small group ministry with kids and as well as the kids I see in my practice is that everything in our culture belittles our kids. It attacks their self-image of who they are. In little boys in one way, little girls another way. In the particular case of little girls, it may be the thigh gap that they don't have or the thinness they don't have or the beauty that they don't have. And I felt it was really important to write about how not even the models can reach the standard that media is placing on them. Models are airbrushed to the point that
they often
can't even recognize themselves. And I probably should take a time to mention that the book's really unique in the sense that, for example, in the case of models being airbrushed, there's a number of wonderful videos on the internet that demonstrate this. And so in the book, we have little QR codes, little tiny boxes that you can photograph with a smartphone or you can capture with your computer that will take you to these safe websites that have more information that's medically reliable and biblically sound. So it was really fun to do a book that opens up an entire world of information for parents. It gives them a lot more information than they get just with the book itself.
Right, right. You know, I'm frequently asked by patients in my practice if boys go through mood shifts during puberty. Can you talk about that? I know we're talking about girls today, but I just had to get that in there while we're talking about moods and depression in girls because, you know, parents frequently ask about boys.
No, they do, and there's a chapter in the boy's book about that. And one particular warning to parents is that we've seen a dramatic rise in the use of anabolic steroids, these medications that boys use to increase their body mass because they're under a self-image attack also. And so in gyms and club sports and intramural sports and high school and even junior high sports, there's increasing availability of these medications. And they have some dramatic side effects. One long-term effect is the acceleration of atherosclerosis, of hardening of the arteries. These kids that take these drugs young are more likely to die of heart attacks and strokes at younger age. But when they're kids, they're more likely to have emotional changes. And it can be everything from almost manic highs to very severe depression, everything from steroid psychosis to severe depression. And so it can be one of those warning signs for parents to look for when their boys begin to go through mood changes. But in the book, we also talk about other things parents can look for in their boys and in their girls when it comes to those mood changes of puberty that are going to happen to both sexes.
Okay. So mood mood changes will occur in boys whether they're taking steroids or not. But what you're saying is if those mood swings are very dramatic, is that a red flag to parents that maybe they're taking steroids or some other kind of drug?
Or there's something else going on.
Something else.
It's a red flag to get some help, whether it's talking to a pastoral professional or your family's physician, your kid's physician, to just ask for some help. Say, we're seeing something here we don't understand. We'd like to get a little bit more information.
That's a great piece of advice, because parents will often write to me on our, you know, Family Talk website and say, I think my child may be depressed. They're having anxiety problems. Where should I go? And I always encourage people to go to their pediatrician or their family doctor. Is that what you recommend as well, to start there? Or do you recommend they start with a counselor?
It depends on your local situation. It might be a youth pastor, a pastoral professional, a counselor at your church. It could be a school counselor, might be a way to go. But in the girl's book, in the question on depression, we actually give what is now considered a very safe and effective little screening tool of just asking two questions that can screen for depression. Parents can ask this of kids can ask it of themselves, but also kids can ask it of other kids. And then if either of those screening questions are positive, then that's a red flag that someone should get involved.
Walt, what are those two questions that a parent can ask a child if they're concerned the child might have depression?
Sure, and this could be their child or a child they love. Maybe they're teaching a Sunday school class or they're a coach. But they're very simple questions. The first one is, have you less interest and pleasure in doing the things that you used to enjoy doing, used to find joy or happiness doing things? Do you not find that anymore? That's number one. And then number two, do you feel down, depressed, or hopeless? Simple questions. Have you lost your joy? Do you feel down, depressed, or hopeless? And if either one of those are positive and you have felt that way more than a couple weeks, then it's worth getting some help.
Exactly. Because kids will feel that way for a day and then it'll go away and then they'll come back another day. But the real key is if kids are feeling that consistently every day for a longer period than 2 weeks, then parents need to pay attention that something could be really wrong with their child and depression. And when you're treating kids for depression, how young should a parent be looking out for depression in kids? Is this something that parents should look out for when their kids are 8 or when they're 15 or when they're 18?
Well, as the age of the start of puberty has dropped, particularly in girls, so has the age of the start of depression. And so practicing docs like you and I are seeing these illnesses we used to only see in adults earlier and earlier and earlier. And so in the case of these two questions, if they're turning positive, even in a child that's in elementary school, then it's worth getting someone to take a look.
Exactly, because I think there's a lot of fear in parents out there when we see on the news the violence that it's occurring and the boys who are going in and shooting people and hurting kids. Many people think, well, couldn't somebody have recognized that there was a problem in that boy ahead of time and avoided this tragedy? But those things can be hard to recognize, particularly if you're a parent who doesn't spend any time with your child. So, but I want all parents to realize that most kids who are depressed don't go into schools and shoot people. So, you know, it's a really important thing to recognize, a problem to recognize, and ask your physician for help for. Let's move on and talk about sleep, because I see a whole lot of tired kids, particularly teenagers in my practice. How much sleep does a 10-year-old and then a 14-year-old girl need to stay healthy?
Well, for girls and boys, and this shocks most of the parents in my practice, the younger preteens need between 10, 12 hours of sleep a night. Teens need around 10. It varies from child to child. Adults, 8 to 9 hours. What we know is that kids, teens, or parents that get less than this have worse grades at school. They have worse standardized test scores. They have worse performance at work. And the most shocking thing, I think, in the medical studies in the last few years has been that the reduction that you have in sleep increases your risk of obesity. We now know that the hormone that increases your appetite goes up if you sleep less at night. The hormone that decreases your appetite goes down if you sleep less at night. And so now we have an entire chapter in the book for what do you do if you're overweight? What are some things you can do as a family to fight that? And of course, it involves some nutritional decisions. That's kind of one of the legs of the three-legged stool, if you would, is nutritional choices. The other is physical choices of movement and exercise. But the shocking one to parents is sleep. Mm-hmm. That as your kids get more sleep, they're less likely to be obese, to be overweight. They're more likely to perform better at school, to learn better. Their behavior is better. They feel better. You feel better. The family feels
right.
better.
They're nicer to be around.
You bet.
They concentrate more. So let's just go back over that so that parents are clear about the hormone shifts and the sleep. Mm-hmm. So the longer a child sleeps at night, the less likely they are to have a weight issue.
Correct.
So sleep more, you're skinnier.
Mm-hmm.
Sleep less, you're at risk for having obesity because the hormone that controls appetite goes up when you sleep. Mm-hmm. And goes down when you're not sleeping.
Yep. And for the scientists in the audience, ghrelin, G-H-R-L-E-N, is the hormone that gives you a greater appetite. Leptin is the hormone that gives you lesser appetite. And if you aren't sleeping well, then your ghrelin levels go up. You have more appetite. You eat more irrespective of your weight, and you have less of that protective hormone, that leptin that lessens appetite. And so it improves your health almost by every measure to increase your sleep. Now, this can be hard for parents because your kids aren't sleeping that much, you're not sleeping that much. And so one of the tips that we used in our family and that I give in the book is maybe just set the goal to increase 15 minutes of sleep
right.
a night for this month. Then next month, add another 15 minutes and begin to ask, well, what are some activities we need to stop or we need to decrease? We know that kids that have chocolate or sodas, colas, after 3 p.m. are more likely to have sleep disturbances because
chocolate and soda mm-hmm. after 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. more likely to have sleep disturbance.
Because the caffeine sticks around longer in kids than it does in adults. We know that kids who watch TV or any screen, whether it's a computer or a smartphone, within an hour of sleep time are more likely to have disturbed sleep. We know that kids that exercise and roughhouse within an hour of sleep have disturbed sleep. So what we do in the book is give 24 suggestions on what parents can begin to implement to not only improve their children's sleep, but to improve their sleep. And one that shocks the parents in my practice is that there should be no electronic instruments in the bedroom, no smartphones, no computers, no TVs in a child's bedroom or a parent's bedroom. In fact, the shocking study in the pediatric literature of the last couple of years was that if a child has a smartphone or a cell phone in their bedroom and it goes off only once during the month, during sleep time, that child's sleep will be disturbed for the next 2 to 3 months. There's just something about those computer screens in the bedroom that disturbs sleep. And so getting them out. The other reason for getting electronics out of the bedrooms is it just protects our children.
Exactly. And I think a loving parent recognizes that it's not about trusting your children to make good decisions about using the internet and what to see and what not to see, but it really is about protecting your uh-huh. child from being preyed upon and from being tempted. And I think the idea, too, of a laptop in a bedroom for a young boy is just asking for trouble. Because whether he's searching for pornography or whether he isn't, you know, if he uses his computer enough, it's going to find him mm-hmm, somehow. Mm-hmm. And I
Absolutely.
Think that's cruel to a young boy. So I love that. So good sleep hygiene means keeping electronics out of the bedrooms, televisions, iPhones, iPads, iPods, anything visual and auditory. And I tell parents to just plug them in the kitchen mm-hmm. at a certain hour every night. And that means mom and dad as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not really okay to tell the kids to shut everything off and you sit there texting your friends until midnight. So a couple good, as we wrap up the sleep section, of good tips for good sleep hygiene. An hour before bed for teenage kids, you would say no electronics because you don't want them in the bedroom. And you say no chocolate or soda after 3. What are a couple other things you would recommend to parents out there listening who are having teenagers that are having a hard time going to sleep?
Sure. The darker the room, the better. The quieter the room, the better. The cooler the room, the better. In fact, kids don't only sleep better in cooler rooms. They're actually more likely to lose weight if they sleep in cooler rooms. And that can be part of a family's quality time, that last half an hour, 45 minutes before bedtime, where stories can be told or hymns can be sung or scripture can be memorized or special quiet times can be had. But with Kate and Scott, they're adults now, our kids, but they still talk about those bedtime rituals that we had where they were hugged, kissed, listened to, prayed with, and prayed for, and read a Bible story every night. It becomes part of that quality, secure family time. Meg, I've come to realize through my life, and I'm glad my dad taught me this as a young dad, that there is no quality time without quantity time.
Yes.
It just doesn't happen. And so anything that a parent can do to increase that time with each child is going to be an investment that's going to pay dividends for years to come.
Exactly. And I think that many times parents who are having difficulty with a teenager or a child who won't behave and he's out of sorts and he's angry all the time, one of the things that I tell them is you need to spend more time with them so that you can figure this out, so that you can dialogue through, pick your way through. I think our tendency to just sort of avoid this just fuels the problem because it's really communication and just trudging through the difficult conversations, the temper tantrums, the whatever, that will bring you out on the other side. And that's when really good reconciliation can come. So I'm so grateful to hear that. Well, we don't have much time left, but I really do want to talk about weight issues before we let you go, because this is a big problem for girls. On the one hand, we don't want to encourage dieting because we don't want to encourage girls to starve. And the last thing that I read about that was that about 30% of third grade girls have considered being on a diet or been on a diet. And, you know, that's 9 years old. But at the same time, we don't want them to be overweight. So how do we walk that very delicate balance between keeping our girls from over-focusing on their weight and not overeating?
Meg, that's absolutely critical question. And so in the book, we guide families to determine, where are you? Are you underweight? Are you average weight, good weight? Are you overweight? Because what the research is showing is that the childhood obesity epidemic is so far flung that parents can't even tell if their children are normal weight or not. The majority of kids who are obese, their parents can't even recognize it in them because they look normal. And so we give instructions on how you can take your height and how you can take your weight, and then suggest internet sites that allow you to see exactly what is your child's body mass index percentile. Now, that's a big, long word, but it's a number that will give you a clue as to whether your child is underweight, a healthy weight, are overweight. And for the overweight child, you're absolutely right. Diet is harmful to kids. I tell parents the first three letters of diet are die. You don't want those kids to diet. I tell parents that if one child is overweight and the others aren't, that child's not the problem. It's a family issue. And so how can you find better nutrition as a family? How can you find better activity as a family? And how can you find better sleep as a family? And to that end, I developed, along with experts at Florida Hospital in Orlando, Florida, an 8-week program for families. It allows families to get together once a week and just choose from a series of activities to improve the health of the entire family. And this 8-week program, we've now tested it clinically in 3 different studies, and it's amazing how effective it is, not emphasizing diet, just emphasizing healthy decisions. And in the book, we tell parents how they can get that 8-week program for free, complimentary. It's available for them. And if it's helpful for them, at the end of 8 weeks, there's actually a second 8-week program they can do. Now, it's 8 weeks. You can do once a week for 8 weeks. You can do twice a month for 4 months. You can do once a month for 8 months. It doesn't care. But the idea is Healthy decisions for your entire family makes for a more healthy family.
So would it be unfair to a 12-year-old girl who is 20 pounds overweight for the mother or the father to say, you need to be on a diet and we're going to fix you special food and then we're going to eat the other food? Would it work?
Not only would it not work, it's harmful. At least that's what the studies show. In fact, to put a single child on a diet like that backfires. Those are the kids that yo-yo. Those are the kids whose self-image goes to pot. And it's how can we as a family make decisions? What we found in our studies at Florida Hospital, Meg, was especially when the kids get into this, they sort of run the whole program because parents kind of want to cheat a little bit. And they say,
this
is our family. And so the 8-week program is a way for families to make decisions about turning the TV off more, maybe going screen-free, taking walks together, activity together, those pre-sleep activities we talked about earlier, but lots of decisions. It doesn't matter which ones you make. They're all healthy, but make the ones that work for your family. And what we found in our studies is if you start off real easy and get a little bit of fruit, then you develop some momentum. You want to improve your family's health, and that's a good thing.
So if a parent has 4 kids and only one is overweight, would you recommend then changing the eating habits of all 6 of the family members?
Absolutely, because most of us can make decisions that would improve our nutrition. That would help all of us. In fact, I remember one family in our original study. It was kind of a study of 12 families just to see how this 8-week program would work. And that family had 2 normal weight children. One overweight child, a normal weight parent, and an overweight parent, all of them enjoyed the changes. And I think what it was, not just the healthy decisions, but having more time together as a family. It's almost as if God has designed us to be together as a family. And we've lost that because of so many social and cultural pressures. My hope is that this book will help folks center back on what's important.
Yeah. It is remarkable how going through the things that you talk about in your book and so many times the answer to the issues or the answer to the questions is spend more time in that family unit and work things out and sleep more. I love that. You know, sleep more. We would be remiss if we did not mention Dr. Mari Wolliver. And she played an important part in the writing of this book, didn't she?
Especially the girls' book. Dr. Mari and I practiced together in the Orlando area for a number of years. She's a precious follower of Jesus, and her husband is a priest in the Orlando area. And I felt it was so critical to have a mom's touch. And that was proven in just in our working together. Some of the stories that Dr. Mari tells about her young preteen, Hannah, and what they're going through now, I think are going to really reach out and touch readers. And I'm grateful for her participation.
I loved reading, too. You can tell the woman's touch in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we use just a little bit different language and, you know, things get a little softer. Well, we have been talking about the wonderful book, The Ultimate Girl's Body Book. And I highly recommend every parent who has a daughter to go out and buy a copy and read it with your daughters. You know, don't just hand it to your daughter, but you will learn so much about her by reading the book and then give it to her, let her read it, and then you can use it as a discussion guide. Dr. Larimore, you have a lot of great resources on your website. Can you quickly tell us what those are and how people can get hold of them?
Meg, let me just give a couple that I think would help most parents out there. The first is I have a daily medical news you can use blog for parents. It has a couple of news stories every day. You can get to it at drwalt.com. That's drwalt.com. Click on it, sign up for it. It's absolutely free. And the second is a devotional for families. It's called Morning Glory, Evening Grace. It's 2 devotionals each day. It's not man's word or woman's word. It's God's word. Just a short devotional on a topic. What does the Bible say? What does God believe about the topic? Once again, that's available at drwalt.com. Complimentary, no charge.
Wow. You know, and there aren't many places, ladies and gentlemen, where you can get solid medical information that's reliable and scientifically based and biblical information that is solid Christian advice, too. So I think it's wonderful that you've made both of those things available to all of your readers. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. God bless this book. I know he will. It's wonderful. And I look forward to book number 31. Is it going to be a book number 31?
I'm working on 31, 32, and 33 now. So we'll,
of course
we'll
you
see
are.
how the Lord does that. But Meg, thanks for the privilege of being with you.
Oh, thank you, Walt.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to the conclusion of a two-part program featuring physician-in-residence Dr. Meg Meeker and Dr. Walt Larimore here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you'd like more information about Dr. Larimore or his book, The Ultimate Girl's Body Book, visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. God bless, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.